Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Look at you, got a good haircut.
Yeah, went to a real high-end salon today. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's called Superkutz.
It's German.
Yeah. Because, of course, Germans are known for their styling. Wasn't Vidal Sassoon German? I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. He could be anything.
Easily.
He could be anything over in that. In the continent, as we call it over here.
He wore turtlenecks, right? I mean, that's half the qualification.
So you didn't go to Bo-Wo-Wo-Ricks?
Does Bo-Ricks still exist?
Of course, it has to.
I haven't seen him in a while.
Certainly, Lady Jane's hasn't taken it out of commission. I don't know if you guys have Lady Jane's out there.
I don't think so. Is that where it's all women and they kind of dress scantily?
It's the Hooters of haircuts. It's stupid. There's no point to it because I want no interaction with the people that cut my hair. I want limited interaction.
And I got a good lesson in that today because I went to get my hair cut. And I really appreciate when the person doesn't say anything to me.
Yeah.
I love that. But there are some stylists, I think, that get uncomfortable. They feel a need to strike up some conversation because I imagine we're not normal that most people like conversation.
Yeah, it's all stupid small talk. It's like talking about their kids. How often do you get haircuts? Because I'm like now that my hair is short, it's maybe every 6 months I get it cut.
It's once every 2 months probably for me.
Okay.
So this guy, he looks about maybe mid-30s, white dude, kind of bro-ish.
Was he suggested to you?
No, you get whoever, you know. Yeah. So this is the guy, this is the straw I pulled. Sit down. This guy is a chatterbox. He has a lot to say. Of course, asked me what I do. Or no, the first thing he said was, "Where are you from?" And I was like, "Here and
from around here,
LA and Detroit." And apparently, he caught some accent or something. So I explained that I moved around a lot because I had been teaching English, and this set him off. He had an agenda that he wanted to get into. He kind of does the little lean-in thing.
Uh-oh.
And kind of quiets his voice a little bit. And he's like, what do you think about...
Oh, no.
What do you think about...
Oh, no.
This... I don't know if this is the right place for this, but...
Oh, no.
You know, do you think English should be the mandated first language of everyone? I instantly go, no, not at all.
Uh-oh.
And
what was his reaction? Did he recoil?
And he's like, well, you know, have you ever thought about the financial aspect of it? Which, of course, is the wellspring for every conservative idiot is something financial because cash rules everything around me. Dollar, dollar, bill, y'all. It's like Wu-Tang
right.
And libertarians and conservatives are just obsessed with... They think everything comes down to dollar values. And apparently he believes that English should be the mandated first language of everyone because it makes financial sense. Because think about all the signs... was his main example. Oh,
are you kidding me? Like, as though... Wait. His platform states that we would save money on road signs and bathroom signs.
And like, pamphlets and directions and stuff. Yeah, that was his... That's what
kind of... I mean, like, he's not acknowledging the fact that for most people in the world, they're not going to be speaking English. Sure. English is the language of business, right? Like, that's the international language of commerce. But technically it's not anymore. I mean, that's an archaic notion. And this guy is trying to rope you into a form of bigotry, but trying to couch it in some kind of, like, rational, or the way he's rationalizing it, you know, like these terms that he thinks, well, no, I mean, I'm just trying to make fiscal sense here. You know, I don't hate people. They can speak their language. But, you know, when I call the cable company, I don't want to listen to Rajib in Mumbai. I want to hear Carl from Pasadena, you know.
His examples were all really... They were even more offensive because we were in a supercut surrounded by
Chinaman,
what he called, you know, second language.
Yeah.
Learners, people whose English wasn't their first language. And it looked to be mostly, you know, Latina women. And so he kept like kind of hushing in, and he was trying to form this bubble around us as if, listen, dude, it's me and you. And then there are these other people, and his examples weren't like call centers or anything. They were much more personal, where he was saying, I need to explain this movie to them. But I was finding that I couldn't explain, like they couldn't understand what the depth of the movie, because they didn't have depth. And when I would say like he and them needed to, they were like, what? And I had to dumb down, for lack of a better term, man, dumb down my speech.
Oh my God.
And he, the whole time he's trying to implicate me in his fucking bigotry. And I keep shutting him down saying, no, I don't agree with that. I think if anything, Spanish should be mandated alongside English. I think there's a lot of cultural value in learning in other languages, and then they should all be like, we should be encouraged to be multilingual. And he would do the whole thing where he's like, yeah, I guess, but pushing it. And oh my God, it was so perverse.
And this is a perfect example of the Tiffany principle.
Yeah, you have a grand theory about this.
That's right. The Tiffany principle basically states that when somebody, when you think you're alone now.
But we weren't, was the thing, you know?
Right, well, but he was creating a space where he thought that there was comfort there. Because, you know, again, he was in good company with you. So the Tiffany principle states that, and this is, you can quote me on this. In a situation when two white people are alone, where at least one of those people is a racist dullard, there is at least a 78% chance that said racist dullard will engage the other party, who themselves can be either racist, neutral, or indifferent, or well-educated and open to diversity such as yourself. The racist dullard will co-opt the conversation to make it politically motivated, especially aiming to disparage minorities and women. 78% chance of that happening. If you're ever in an elevator with another white person, the odds are in your favor that you're going to somehow have somebody turn to you and go, how about them blacks? And then you got to be like, oh my God, are we having this conversation right
and
now?
And the strangest thing was, I was making a point to everything he said to say, no, I disagree, and here's why. But he can't fathom a white dude not agreeing.
Well, he wasn't listening to you is what it was. He didn't care. Which reminds me, nobody listens to us. We have no listeners to this. Well, that's not true. I think we have. I think
me,
we have.
You.
Yeah, that's. Well, and I think that makes up the bulk of the listening, you know.
That's half.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 17 of.
You know, fun fact about episode 17.
Yeah.
Is if you remove four of those episodes, you got yourself a baker's dozen. That's a little fun fact.
Oh, I'm one of your hosts, Chris.
I'm your other racist, Tanner, who wants to mandate English.
Please get me out of this podcast. I'm locked in a room with another white man. The chances are...
Chris, have you ever thought about how people of color smell?
Yeah.
You ever think about
this? Wait, no, wait, you tricked me. This is a gaming podcast, not about people of other ethnic and racial backgrounds might smell different. So what did you play this week? I didn't play shit. Your turn.
So I'm submitting myself to a social experiment this week. Uh-oh. And I'm playing Candy Crush. Do you know Candy Crush?
Isn't that the hit mobile game?
Yeah, it is a phenomenon. It is the, I think has been for the past year or so the top selling app on the App Store.
And I'm pretty sure like that and like Angry Birds are in the billions in terms of like users, something like that.
I mean, I take public transit every day and I would say 80 to 90% of the gaming I see done on public transit is Candy Crush. So I felt obligated to just explore it to see what this was all about, to kind of figure it out. And it is, it's very well designed. I see why it's hooked so many people. It does everything right. It truly is bejeweled, but it's got a lot of extra game modes that provide a variety and challenge to play that makes it much more enticing and gets you, you know, it eases you in on this very simple plane and then ramps very quickly and provides challenge that makes you feel like, well, I was doing so well, god damn it, I'm gonna push through.
So the premise of the game is you're matching lines or two or three like items or something like that, and then the rows continue to cascade, and are you making matches just in rows, or are you trying to, like, I play a game called Dots and you make squares and stuff like that, and it'll get rid of different colored dots on the screen and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's just rows, but they have challenges where you've got to clear this section or you've got to get these things down to the bottom. So they switch it up a lot.
Okay.
And it's the polish that there's so much attention to detail in the experience to it that it feels so much more like a slot machine. You know, it's got all the bells and whistles that I think activate these subconscious things in the brain that are so nefarious that make it more pleasurable on a very human, deep down level in a way.
So give me an example though of the, like, how does challenge increase in the game? Like, it seems like outside of mechanics themselves becoming more difficult, in other words, like lines become more difficult to come across, you know, like items.
Yeah.
Is that what happens? Or is there like, okay.
So you only have a set amount of turns, so that they ramp up the difficulty that way. But then they also clearly do something on the back end that you don't see that just makes stuff not come up as quickly.
Gotcha.
But here's the bullshit.
Okay.
So what they do, and this is a perfect example of why this casual game market is a goddamn cesspool, is so you're playing along, you're killing it. You get to a hard level, and it's clear that unless you're some kind of Candy Crush savant, you're going to run up against a wall in the first 30 minutes of play. And that wall then says, all right, you're done. Put the game down, sit on your ass for a day or whatever, a few hours, and come back later because you fucking blew it. However, pay 99 cents right now and you can keep playing.
What?
It's so evil. And games have been doing this for a while now, but this one just seems so fucking blatant about it.
It's not like back in the days of being at the arcade, you know, and, you know, to continue play, you know, input two quarters or something.
Yeah.
This is a totally nefarious scheme.
It is.
To get people to drop a dollar here and there, because I guarantee you there's people who don't. Well, first off, there's going to be the addicts who are putting in $200 worth of money into Candy Crush a month or so.
Which they do.
Oh, my God. I mean,
it's been verified that people end up spending way more than they ever would on any other app.
But even imagine, like, if you're doing really well and you think, God, I just need that. It's only 99 cents just this one time. Even if you did that once a year and a billion people are playing your game, you know, and those billion people did that one time a year, you're set. Like, that's such an easy business model. It's just, oh my God, we're in the wrong business.
Yeah, so I'm continuing with that. I kind of surprised myself. I thought I was going to totally hate the game, but it was seeping its way into my brain. I was thinking, God, this is kind of enjoyable. It's one of those time killer things. It's mindless, which I hate about games. I don't like mindless games, but it's just, so I've continued to like dabble in it here and there. The other thing I wanted to talk about was I started playing Grand Theft Auto 5, and it's Grand Theft. I mean, it's not comedy on the game. It's not worth it. There's nothing interesting or new about it. It's the same as always. So that, you know, you either like that or you don't. What I'm loving about this game, though, is they included, you know, every player has a phone, and the phone serves as a camera in the game. And I've gotten hooked on taking pictures in the game. Like, I'm a fucking photographer.
Can you take selfies?
Yeah, you can take selfies, which is a kind of brilliant comedic gesture because they look hilarious. And you can see on Rockstar's social club, you can see the pictures everyone's taking. There's a lot of selfies in front of, you know, dead deer and stuff. Yeah. There's also very perverse, I would say a safe bet is about a fifth of all pictures taken on in Grand Theft Auto 5 are of dead women.
By you. You're the one taking these pictures.
No. But I saw that. I was like, it was like stumbling in on a serial killer's like kill room or something. I was like, I went on the social club. I was like, oh, I want to see what artsy and crazy shit people are taking. I was like, no, this is just disturbing. But I'm seriously getting hooked on taking artsy, pseudo artsy photos in Grand Theft Auto 5. I love this feature, and I want this feature in every game now.
Can you like Instagram or what's that? Is that what they call that? These kids these days, where you can make the photo look, you know, hyper glossy and
yeah.
Can you do that?
Yeah, they have little filters which are cool.
That's
and then you
clever.
Can share on you can share on Facebook and Twitter. I shared a couple of them on my personal Twitter. I don't know. I'm I love it. Like the world is so interesting, and you commonly happen on. There was so much artistic talent poured into every little detail that, you know, the light hits a certain way, and you set up your camera and you angle it. And you could take some pretty fun shots. I hope that this becomes a bigger thing. You know, a lot of games have had screenshot functions, but to make it to tie it to social networks and make it so integral in a way that I hope that this becomes a bigger thing.
Two quick questions about it before we break for the next segment. One is, are the missions fun? Because I know in the last Grand Theft Auto, I kind of had a difficult time with having fun in the missions. And then the second question to that is, have you tried co-op?
The missions are the same old. They have a few, from what I've seen so far, they have a few kind of nice set piece moments, but those are few and far between. The thing that is good about the missions are the heists, which are big event-type missions where you break into things and steal, and that's been pretty fun. I haven't done any co-op. It's the same. It's Grand Theft Auto. This is a milestone for what's dropping this week. We've got a game that is nearly just about 20 years in the making.
Whoa.
2 decades. That is over a baker's dozen. Which is what anyone hopes for in game development. And that is a game you already know about, Chris, but I don't think our audience does. Fucking Nightmare Busters, Drizzopped, the platform, everyone, the platform that this dropped on, fucking Super Nintendo.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a Super Nintendo game that came out technically on 12/23/2013, but really, I think, is now openly available this month. Originally developed in 1994. 1994. Okay, now let me parse this out for you. This motherfucker, which is a two-player action game, was developed in 94 by a couple of Europeans whose names I can't pronounce. It was announced in Nintendo Power for the Super Nintendo.
I mean, that alone is incredible.
So it was slated to come out. Apparently, it just didn't ever get published, didn't make sense. I think it was just too late in the cycle or something. doesn't come out, there is this group of people called the Super Fighter Team that try to find these antiquated games that languished and republish them on the original platform in which they were intended. So they took this game out of obscurity and published it as if it was really coming out for the Super Nintendo. Click the link on the show notes on superdumbgames.com. You'll see the box, the cartridge. There is meticulous attention to detail spent here. Chris, did you see the pictures of this thing?
It's the packaging is authentic. The booklet that comes with it is authentic. I mean, this is exactly what you would have received. And I think that when I read the article, they said something about the fact that this is, I mean, it's like using the parts. They're not, this isn't like some recycled, busted-ass cartridge that you're getting. This is like off the production line quality.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. The guy in the article, our show notes will link to a Chris Kohler's article on this game in Wired. He points out how like the box is the same kind of cardboard, if you remember, that sort slightly flimsy and where the inside is a darker kind of cardboard. They got all that down. It's like you've time traveled 20 years in the past. I love it. I think this is the dumbest, most awesome thing. So that's all that's dropping. This is, ladies and gentlemen, January fucking sucks. For games.
The month of dearth.
Oh, it's the worst. So let's go on to Top Sizzlers. Your top stories in gaming news this week. NintendoLife.com, one of our favorites. In fact, we've got an all Nintendo Top Sizzlers this week.
Holy shit.
But NintendoLife.com superstar journalist Thomas Whitehead drops this story on us. It's finally here! A Labrador Retriever themed 2DS case!
He says that with enthusiasm, like with an exclamation.
Yes!
Who is in the market? Wait, are these 2DS cases, is that like, you know how people will buy cases for their phones? Is that like what this is? It's a...
Yeah. But this fucker's got stitching on it. It's got a puppy's face on it with his paws. I think his paws are raised above. It's kind of a leatherette. There is room for 6 cartridges.
Wow. It sounds cumbersome. It doesn't sound like it's something you want to carry around.
Well, the NintendoLife.com comments section has a lot to say about this thing. Let's see. Schnedlick says, how sweet!
That's it? That was it?
Mousy says, it's adorable. Almost makes me want to rush out and get me a 2DS. It's those appealing eyes!
But last time we were on Nintendo Life, weren't we reading a story where like everyone was... I can't even remember what the story was, but the comments section was just so pro-Nintendo. These people are fanboys to the ultimate extent, so they're going to love this. You're reading to me.
Yeah, they...
Is there any naysayers in that comments section at all?
Well, considering what a horrible eyesore I think the 2DS is, says RGEJR, which is in NintendoLife.com comments sections. That's pretty... fucking hardcore. This cover is really nice. That white faux leather with white stitching makes me think it needs some hippie flower power decals on the inside cover. RJ, you, that's a clever comment.
Burn.
Anyway, huge news. I'm really happy that Thomas Whitehead and NintendoLife.com are reporting on that critical information.
Yeah, no, it's exciting news for everyone. The world should be rejoicing. I don't know why Kabul bombings were happening this past weekend. The Taliban, they should have gotten the memo. Well, I guess this was Al-Qaeda. We need to get the Taliban to talk to Al-Qaeda and let them know, like, hey, look, 2DS is releasing Dalmatian covers, so stop bombing people straight away.
Yeah, I think it would be convincing enough. All we've got to do is just show the image of it.
Yeah.
And it would unite everyone.
And then they'll unstrap the bomb vest and go, yes, you guys were correct.
You've done it. This has solved all our problems.
The tribes have united.
The second Nintendo story, a little bit different. This comes from Drombl.com.
Never heard of it.
Headline: Nintendo's game about the Holocaust, slavery, and baby Jesus.
I want this game. I want it. Tell me about it.
So this is another blast from the past around the same era as Nightmare Busters. In 1991, writes Emily Rogers on Drombl, Nintendo's EAD team and Pax Sofnicka co-developed a text-based adventure game. It's not really text-based. I don't know what she's talking about. It is graphical. Called Time Twist, Rekishi no Katasume Day, The game was published by Nintendo for the NES, and Shigeru Miyamoto was listed as supervisor on it. This game is fucked! Here's the story. The year is 1995, and the impending turn of the 20th century is instilling fear and uncertainty in mankind, and fortune-telling shows have become popular. On September 25th, 1995, a young boy living in Tokyo hears at a fortune-telling show that he will meet the girl of his dreams in a museum located outside the city limits. He visits the Devil Museum and meets a girl inside. But a sudden earthquake cuts their meeting short. The boy recites the incantation from the fortune-telling show, said to capture the heart of the girl of his dreams. But the incantation destroys the seal on a vase containing the devil. The reanimated devil takes control of the boy's body, leaving the boy trapped inside the devil's decaying body.
Oh, God.
He chases the devil to the house of Dr. Simon, a physics scientist hiding from the media. The devil has stolen the scientist's time machine called the Time Belt and uses it to travel back in time. The young boy's soul is also pulled back into the past by the Time Belt.
Okay.
This is just the setup.
I mean, actually, so far, I'm okay with what's going on, right? I mean, he just went to the devil's house and...
Just wait. So, throughout the game, you are able to possess the minds of animals and people, and you also have access to other menu commands as well. The goal of the game is to try to stop the devil from wreaking havoc on important events in history. For example, your character transports to the year 1944 and visits southern Germany concentration camps! Where Jews are being exterminated.
Oh my God.
The second bit of information they get from this game. Your character also travels to the Civil War era where you visit cotton plantations in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh boy.
There's a scene where a KKK member shoots an African American woman.
God. I'm getting sick to my stomach thinking about this game. I mean, I'm not joking. I know I try not to be PC, but this is still really, this is so absurd. This is the kind of game that gets created. You remember how Atari would have those like pornographic games where you got to cross a lake without a gator chomping off your Dizak, and then you get to the princess and it looks like you're boning her. Like, those games are funny to me. This game is just kind of tapping into every vein that you just kind of don't.
You witness baby Jesus jump out of the Virgin Mary's arms.
I thought you were going to say her womb. I would have croaked laughing.
And baby Jesus becomes possessed by the devil.
Whoa.
As baby Jesus flies around trying to create chaos, it's your job to beat the devil out of him. The protagonist decides to electrocute baby Jesus.
Oh my God.
Like, it's...
This is...
It feels like this was created just to offend everyone.
Yeah.
But I don't even... I really don't think that was the purpose. I think they were trying to think of the most intense moments from history. And in their 8-bit world, we're going to try to recreate these profoundly depressing and awful moments. And...
It's just, that's nuts. But that reminds me, Bill, the intern, write this down. Contact Shakira Miyamoto. New idea for a game.
Did you just say Shakira?
Shakira Miyamoto. write this down, Bill. Rape of Nanking Simulator 2014. It's got gold written all over it, I think.
So that's...
You're not on board with my game. It's a simulator of it. It's not the real thing, Tanner. Don't get offended.
Hot off the wire, your PR Newswire stories. God damn, we've got a lot this week, so I'm gonna blow through the first one. Major League Baseball apparently has an interactive division. They've announced they are remaking RBI Baseball.
Whoa, I used to love that game.
What I love about this press release, it's two sentences long.
Seems like you devote a bit more to a cult game like that. Like, that's a big-time game.
They don't give a fuck! They're just like, this is coming out, basically. That's all they say. Like, this is coming out. Deal with it.
FYI, period. RBI Baseball en route.
Done. Print it. It's like the press agent for Major League Baseball just dictated this into his phone on the way to work. More interesting to me, however, legendary video game designer Brad McQuaid, a.k.a. the guy who made EverQuest, begins work on the, quote, game no one else will make, end quote.
Well, I think we just talked about the game that no one else will make with that shitty game about the Holocaust, slavery, and baby Jesus. Is there any information on what new game could possibly trump that premise?
Yeah, I love this. I mean, what Brad McQuaid is saying is MMOs have gotten super easy, and they've also focused on solo content.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically saying, fuck it! I'm going to kickstart a game that's for a niche audience, and this game will be an MMO, but it's going to be hard as fuck. So prepare yourself.
It's going to require groups. Is that what he's saying? Like, this is very group-based kind of thing? Is that, or is it still solo, but it's hard?
Yeah, one of their big talking points is that this will require grouping. That grouping is fundamental to the game. They're kind of going back to the old school model, I guess.
He's going back to the roots when EverQuest was a difficult fucking game.
Yeah.
Where it was not easy to get levels and loot.
I'm not convinced you can still create it. You can sustain an MMO with the kind of population this game would attract. Brad McQuaid thinks he can.
Godspeed, McQuaid.
I don't know. I'm excited about it. I like the idea of this kind of game giving it a go.
Mm-hmm.
I think with in a post Dark Souls world, this maybe has some viability. I don't know.
There are people looking to torture themselves with games nowadays. So I think it could be a hit. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's for me, honestly. I played Guild Wars 2 and I loved it, but not enough to continue playing it. And I think Guild Wars 2 captured what it is to be an MMO that sometimes requires groups, other times you can sort of solo on your own. I think it had a really decent balance between the two. And even despite all of that, it just didn't quite engage me the way that I wanted it to. So, I honestly just don't even know what the future of MMOs is, so I'm open to anyone's shot. Like, whatever shot they want to take, I might give it a try. I'm
just happy someone's trying to do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
It seems like the template right now is make it soloable, fuck grouping, it's got to have a real easy ramp. Mm-hmm. And Brad McQuaid is saying, nope, this is going to be really goddamn hard, and you're absolutely going to have to depend on others, which I don't know that I'm at the age where I can deal with that, but I want it to exist.
Yeah, I get the concept behind it. So,
last hot off the wire story, this is a heartwarming story.
Oh.
Video Game Marathon raises over $1 million in 1 week for cancer prevention. Awesome Games Done Quick held a video game marathon stream where they brought together a bunch of Twitch streamers and YouTube dudes and women who got together that are, you know, savants at games. And they just blew through a ton of speedruns. And they raised a shit ton of money. I mean, $1 million in 1 week to do this is incredible.
These guys have been doing it for a few years now, because I remember watching them last year or maybe even in 2012. I mean, I would just tune in at like 3 a.m. to see what bullshit game somebody was playing. I mean, they would play really dumb games. Like, I think last year they played a game for NES called Toki, which is horrible. Just a horrible game with like you got a chimp on a screen. It's a platformer side scroller kind of thing. But you have somebody playing it who is apparently a master of Toki, you know, obscure ass shit.
Yeah,
but it's cool that they come together to make a, you know, to, I don't know. It's a room that looks like it smells like Cheetos and desperation, but they don't give a shit.
So they, I mean, it is, it's truly, I would encourage everyone to go to the Twitch archive and just click on anything, because it's, it kind of connects to that solo podcast I did about the ledge in the house, about these people, they're all about figuring out the system of a game. And unlike I talked about breaking it, they're about absolutely mastering a game system, getting into the deep minutiae of frame counting of animations and designing critical paths through levels and trying to find exploits. And they do a good job of, while someone's playing, they usually have another expert sit there and kind of explain what's going on and give you some tips. And it, I found myself riveted. I have a very low tolerance for this kind of stuff, but I found I could sit there and just watch and watch and watch. And the one that I would recommend, if you're going to watch one of these runs, go and watch the Punch Out, the blindfolded Punch Out runs.
Blindfolded?
Yes! Two dudes sat down, one playing Punch Out, one playing Super Punch Out, wore goddamn blindfolds. And I don't want to spoil it. Just watch it. It is, it's hard to fathom what it takes to play like that, where you have to be, you not only have to memorize so much of the game, the patterns, you have to then intuit the sounds and just get a general feel for it. It's, and it's absolutely riveting. I watched probably an hour today of this shit. It, you've got to see it. It's amazing, and it's great that they raised so much money. So cool. So fucking dumb.
It is cool to see those guys do it. And it is, but for those of you who like are into the stylish casters, you know, on Twitch or whatever, these guys are unpolished when it comes to their look. Yeah. I mean, it is a room full of Nerdstroms. It's not like,
it's wonderful.
The you know, the Tiffany principle doesn't necessarily apply there for that room, because it's like it's a diverse crew of Nerdstroms playing games. So,
and they're all, in their own way, they're all geniuses.
Yeah,
truly.
There's, or at least savants of some kind.
Yeah. Incredible. Highly recommend. Hey, everybody, do you like games? I would hope so. We're going to play a little game in this last wild card segment. I stumbled on a list last week of the top 15 selling consoles of all time. So an ordered list, 1 to 15, 1 being the largest selling console of all time, 15 being the least on this list. And what I'm going to do is challenge Chris to, first of all, the first stage, guess or figure out what the top 5 most selling consoles are, and then to try to order that list and get it correct, 1 to 5.
This is so difficult.
So play along at home, everybody, as Chris tries to, first of all, guess what are the top 5. What's in this pool of 5?
So this is difficult because I'm going to walk the audience through my thought process. The hardest part for me is that, of course, there are different generations or incarnations of systems. For instance,
which you've got to factor in here.
Okay, because
was gaming more popular back in the day or now? When did it peak? Is it peaking now? Who knows?
Right, because, for instance, I know Atari had the 2600, 5200, 7800. Will one of those three crack the top 5? Or are those, you know, relegated to maybe, I don't know, 11 to 20, you know, somewhere in that area, whatever. And then the same goes with Sega products, Nintendo products. PlayStation has the 1, 2, and the 3. Now, now the new PlayStation, but I don't know if the are those is Xbox One and PS4 counted in this at all, or
no, those are left out. Okay. We're just going through the last generation.
Okay, so Wii U is out as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course it is. Everybody, nobody's buying the Wii U. That was the joke. Okay, boy, oh boy, in no particular order, but I'm gonna say it as like number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, just so you know, I'm picking five. All right.
Yeah.
So my first pick is the Super Nintendo.
Okay. Let's go through your five, and I'll tell you how many.
Okay. My second pick then would be the regular Nintendo, just the NES.
All right. The Nintendo.
my third pick is going to be, oh boy, it's between PlayStation and PlayStation 2, and I'm going to say PlayStation 2.
Okay.
Fourth pick, Genesis.
Interesting. So you're going for two in that era right now.
Yeah, well, they're competitors, but now you made me guess whether or not, or second guess. Because, well, no, I'm still going to stick with it. I'm going to say that Genesis and SNES still had such a control over the market at that time that, you know, it was either or when you went to the, I guess TurboGrafx-16 siphoned off a little bit, but that's kind of like, you know, that's like a third-party candidate siphoning off votes from the two-party system. And then for my last pick, and this is, I think this makes this very Nintendo-heavy, but I'm going to go with the Wii. And against my better judgment, I'm leaving out the original Xbox. I have a feeling... I have a feeling that the original Xbox might have sold, but then I'm also thinking about there's also the Dreamcast and the GameCube. I'm locking in Genesis, Super Nintendo, Nintendo Entertainment System, PS2, and Wii.
Okay, locked in out of that list of five. Three are right, two are wrong.
Three are right, two are wrong. Okay.
So out of the Genesis, Super Nintendo, Nintendo, PlayStation 2, and Wii, what are the two that are incorrect there?
The two incorrect are, I'm going to say, the Genesis.
Yep.
And the PlayStation 2.
No.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So now the list. Okay, now the list. We've knocked out Genesis. You've got Super Nintendo, Nintendo, PlayStation 2, and Wii. One of those should not be on this list.
Oh, God.
It's not the PlayStation 2.
Oh, God. Boy, what about... Oh, like, this seems weird to say, but what about the Nintendo Entertainment System?
No!
Of course not. I knew it was in the top... All right.
So Nintendo and PlayStation 2 are locked. Is it the Wii or Super Nintendo?
I'm going to go with Super Nintendo.
Correct.
Because I know the Wii sold a shit ton. I know it did.
So now you've got three of the top five. Nintendo, PlayStation 2, and Wii. With Super Nintendo and Genesis being eliminated, they are not in the top five.
Okay. So now
that 16-bit era did not make it. So to the top five.
I'm going to add two now, and I'm going to say the original Xbox and the PlayStation original.
Out of those two choices, Xbox and PlayStation, one is correct.
Oh, no. All right. I'm getting rid of Xbox.
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
So you've got four. Nintendo, PlayStation 2, Wii and original PlayStation are on the top five. Those are four of the top five. You've eliminated Xbox, Super Nintendo, and Genesis.
Okay, so here's where my mind is going, because now it's like, okay, is it PS3 or the 360? Or is there a wild card I haven't even thought about, like GameCube or something? Xbox 360, I'm locked in.
Correct!
Yes! I did it! Oh my god! I did it! I'm excited.
We now have our list of five that you need to get in order. We've got Nintendo, original Nintendo, PlayStation 2, Nintendo Wii, PlayStation 1, and the Xbox 360.
All right, hang
How
on.
Are so, those going to fall?
Okay.
How are you going to approach this one?
I think that we've already mentioned in another episode that the Wii it was like the top-selling console of all time. I think. But I might be mistaken. I'm putting Wii number one. I'm putting NES number two. I'm putting PS... No, I can't do that. I'm putting three... No, fuck. I'm putting 360 number three, PS2 number four, PS1 number five. Lock me in.
Okay, so we've got Nintendo Wii at number one.
Yep.
NES number two, 360 at number three, PlayStation 2 at number four, PlayStation at number five. Somehow.
No way.
Miraculously.
No way. No way.
You managed to get every single number of this 1 to 5 list wrong.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
The entire list is fucked.
None
of these should be in their current positions. The Wii should not be at number one. The NES should not be at number two. 360 should not be at number three. PS2 should not be at number four. PlayStation should not be at number five.
All right. Number one, NES. Number two, Wii. Number three, PS1. Number four, PS2. Number five, 360. Lock me in.
All right. Let me see here. Wrong. Wrong. Oh, wrong.
Oh, no.
Wrong. Right. So the 360 is the number five.
Okay.
Top-selling console of all time. So you're locked in at 360 in the 5 slot, but Nintendo is not the number 1. Wii is not the number 2. PlayStation is not the number 3. And PlayStation 2 is not the number 4.
Holy fuck. Okay, so that means NES and Wii are not what I thought, which is either interchangeably 1 or 2. So, I'm going PS2. You said Wii isn't number 2. And NES can't be... Okay, PS2. Fuck, what? That means I have to go PS1... Wii, NES, 360.
Okay, so PS2 in the number one slot.
Yeah.
PS1 in the number two slot.
Followed by Wii, NES, and 360.
Let's see. Judges, all five are correct.
Whoa, I did it! And, oh my gosh.
The power of deductive reasoning, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Your number one top-selling console of all time. How many units do you think the PlayStation 2 sold?
I mean, everyone I knew got PlayStation 2. I'm going to say... Didn't we say like the Wii had 100 million at some point? So if the Wii had 100 million and that's number three, I'm going to just round up. Clean number, 150 million for PS2, 125 for PS1, 100 for Wii, NES, I don't know, 50, 360, 25.
You are close on the PlayStation 2. It sold, according to these numbers, 153.5 million consoles. Which this is the most staggering thing about how successful the PlayStation 2 was. It sold 51 million more units than the number two console, which was PlayStation.
Wow.
So the PlayStation 2 was not only the top-selling console of all time, it sold more units than the number two most-selling console by a number that, like, for example, PlayStation 3 sold 55 million total. So the PlayStation 2 sold all... that the PlayStation 3 sold more than the PlayStation. It was so insanely successful, it's hard to even fathom.
Jesus Christ.
Massive success. And then the PlayStation sold around 100 billion. Wii sold around 90. NES around 62. 360 around 58. PlayStation 3 just under at around 56.
Wow. Which is weird. I mean, honestly, I would have thought the 360 was higher on the list. Originally, I ranked it at 3 because I thought for some reason, I thought that the Xbox 360 had won some kind of a console war, but I guess it, I mean, I guess it didn't, because I bought that 360 alongside the PS3 and I just never played the Xbox 360 when I bought it. It didn't work for me as a system, but
the 360 crushed early on and did really well in the West, but PS3, you know, caught up later on. The rest of the list, so number 6 is PS3, number 7 is the SNES, number 8 is the Genesis, number 9 N64, 10 Atari, 11 Xbox, 12 GameCube, 13 Dreamcast, 14 TurboGrafx, 16.
Damn.
15 Saturn are your top 15.
Poor Saturn. But that means then that the Saturn still has exceeded Wii U sales, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think the Wii U is... Well, no, actually, I think the Wii U may have crested this list now. I think they've sold maybe 10 million, or maybe it was 8.9 million, I think, actually. But the Wii U will make it on this list, I think.
I just pulled up... Well, at least this is on Wikipedia. The list of best-selling game consoles shows... Sega Saturn, 9.5 million units. Wii U, 4.3 million.
Oh, I thought they were up at like 8. Wow. God.
So the Saturn sold double the Wii U. That's crazy.
Well, but that's, you know, Wii U is still fairly new. But the PS4 and Xbox One both sold around 4 million in like a month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Poor Wii U.
Oh man! So when you were approaching this list, did you have an idea? Like, were you as far off as I was on some of these, or did you think maybe the PS3 broached the top five somehow? Or
I probably would have guessed straight. I knew PlayStation 2 was the top selling console of all time. I probably would have put Wii at number 2 and then rounded out the top five. I think. I mean, I probably would have thrown the 360, PS3, and NES. Mm-hmm. I think the surprising thing for me is that the first PlayStation is number 2. I didn't know that it was that huge.
Me neither. I mean, when I was originally considering it, I was remembering what it was like to try to rent one of those from the game rental stores when it came out, and it was like, I mean, not just to try. Like, I didn't really care to, because it didn't feel like I needed to. I was still, at the time that PlayStation came out, I was still playing Super Nintendo and Genesis, because that was what, 94 the PlayStation came out, I think.
But
so.
That, I think that was, like, the PlayStation was a distinct change.
Oh, it was. No, you know? Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it used discs over carts, yeah, and stuff like that, but there was still something, like, I was still hooked on some games. Like, I wasn't ready to switch over, almost in the same way I'm not ready yet to switch over to the Xbox One or PS4, because I still feel like I still have to play Last of Us, and even if it's backwards compatible or something, I still feel like I'm going to play it on the PS3 because I own one already. I might as well just get it for the platform I have.
Did the first PlayStation launch with Final Fantasy VII? Because I know that was that when I got my PlayStation, that's the game I got, and that it was so huge.
It launched with titles including Battle Arena Toshinden, which I liked that game. If I don't know if you remember that game.
I remember the name, at least.
Doom, Warhawk, Air Combat, Philosoma, and Ridge Racer and Rayman.
Oh, that's not a great lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah, so FF7 came later. But when FF7 hit, it was, that game was so massive.
Yeah, that's when I bought a PlayStation, was when I... Yeah. When that game first came out.
All right, so that is the console, the one-off top-selling console games of all time game.
Speaking of some of the next generation consoles, you and I were tossing around an idea of possibly having some friends of the show who have some experience with the Xbox One and the PS4 coming on and giving some kind of glimpse at what their experiences have been. Is that still in the works? Are we negotiating with their agents at this time?
Yeah, but I insist that we have them call in and we put a helicopter sound behind them.
Yeah.
Like they're up in the traffic copter.
Yeah.
Reporting from the field.
That's an easy thing to do, because I know somebody who owns a helicopter, so we will get each of them up in one.
Yeah, because of course you don't want to just get a helicopter sound and put it
over. No, I don't do that with any of the sounds on this podcast. Every sound you hear on the podcast is authentic. It's created right here in my own studio.
Yeah, you create the Foley.
That's right. It's just like if you went to, you know, the Jim Henson studio or who's the other guy who does a lot of makeup? I can't think of his name now. Guy does monster makeup stuff.
From Zubily Zoo. What's that guy's name?
Zubily Zoo.
Who's that? The guy that with the lead in Zubily Zoo.
Ben Vereen.
He's probably got some makeup kits lying around.
Shit.
Is he still alive?
Ben Vereen. He should be. If he's dead, I'm being. No, he's still alive. I was gonna be pissed. Yeah, that dude's kicking it. He doesn't give in that quickly. I'm done. I really don't feel like talking anymore to any of these people. Are you done with them?
Yeah.
Because let's do what we did in our Splatterhouse 2 playthrough and actually hit the quit button when asked whether you want to go on. That should be loading up this week, I imagine, right? They can check out YouTube.
There'll be a Splatterhouse 2 Double Impact this week at some point. So as always, go to superdumbgames.com. Subscribe to any relevant social media links. Go to iTunes, find us, subscribe,
rate
and review us. It would be nice. We'd appreciate it.
And do us a favor. I think we're going to be playing Left 4 Dead 2 The Ledge this Friday, possibly, I hope. And tune in for that stream. That would be at twitch.tv/superdumbgames. That does it.
Dumb games.